Pod from Godjal Magazine, where we're talking news, culture, and the internet from a brown perspective.
We're recording with Listening Party inside Canal Street Radio. I'm Nadia Agrawal.
And I'm Anushka Batil. Nadia, how's it going? How's your week been?
My week was tiring. I spent most of the weekend kind of just sitting in one spot. But I did a lot of cooking. I made a loaf of sourdough bread, which was amazing. And then I quickly followed it up with a pot of fresh homemade rajma, because you can't have rajma without sourdough bread.
That's not a thing.
Okay, I don't know about you. I'm going to assume that you're entirely wrong. But, like, coming home from college, my mom would always make rajma as, like, a homecoming thing. And then my dad, who grew up in Texas, would always serve it with toasted, buttered sourdough bread. And it was, like, everything.
It does sound really good, but I'm really curious about how... Do you eat it like avocado toast?
Or you mean like open?
Yeah, like an open-faced sandwich. Like, or are you eating it like a roti, you know, like ripping off chunks of bread and like...
Yeah, both. There's no wrong way, really. Like, okay. It's all good. I like to scoop every bite that I take. I like to scoop a spoonful of rajma onto my bread and then eat it off my bread. Take a bite. It's got like beans and
you guys still, like, can't see my face right now, but I'm staring at her like, what the fuck is going on?
Her lip is curling so bad. It's so good. I think it's something about like the buttery saltiness of the bread, and then like the rajma being really like you know, thick and creamy, and like, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like really, really good. And I feel like y'all are knocking it before you even try it, and that's not what we do here.
We will try it next episode. You're just gonna hear a lot of like chewing noises.
I just feel like if you've ever dipped like garlic bread in marinara sauce, then like this should not be a huge jump for you.
Fair,
right?
Okay,
yeah. I mean, I'm all about these bread combinations. I can eat anything off of toast.
Yeah, well, I mean, toast is like, you said you were a bread driven person earlier.
Yeah, bread driven. I mean, I'm vegan. Like, what do you want me to do? All I have is carbs, like carbs and sugar. Same thing.
Amazing.
What about you, Anushka? Tell me about your weekend.
Nothing crazy is happening. I am moving rooms in my apartment this weekend, which should not be a big deal. But like, moving in New York is always shitty, no matter what.
Even if you're moving 10 feet?
Even if it's literally like 4 feet. It's the room like next door to my room. But I am very commitment phobic, and I don't like having stuff. And whenever you're moving, you have to like, it's just like a inventory of like all of this junk you own, you know?
You're literally shoving your stuff across the hall and you're like, oh my God, I have too much stuff.
Suddenly I'm like, why do I own a mattress? I don't need this. I don't need clothes. I don't need pillows. None of this is like necessary.
So you're just gonna like throw away all your things, become an ascetic, live in the Himalayas, and just like pray. That's your next step.
I don't think I have the emotional fortitude to do that, but it does sound very freeing.
Okay, well, I think we should jump into our main topic of the day, because I think as you're talking about getting rid of all your stuff, it makes sense with the theme, which is sustainable fashion or ethical fashion, like basically like consuming ethically, which is like our favorite word here, like how do you do things ethically, but yeah, like how do you consume and how do you be a consumer without like fucking destroying the world and society and everything as we know.
Yeah, so this week we have Natasha Sumanth from Gundi Studios here, which is an art and fashion brand by and for They See Woman. That's woman with an X.
Yep.
Do you pronounce that like differently?
No, I've always wondered. I think you just say woman.
You just say women, yeah. But then you have to, like, if you're saying it vocally, you have to be like, women with an X.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't really used that in practice. Like, I haven't really,
How would you pronounce it?
Wimix.
Totally.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I think that I'm going to do that from now on.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is now a podcast style guide.
Yeah. but yeah, no, I just really like the internet thing of having that X between the M and the N. You know, it just cuts out the word man from the word. And yeah.
I don't think it's an internet thing. I think it comes from like feminist foremothers, right? One of them.
So I think it's like half and half. I think it was probably a thing, and then
took new life on the internet. Yeah, for sure.
And something about like being more inclusive of like what what right. a woman is. Mm. Yeah. And different types of women. But yeah, Nadia, your Rajma thing, I'm sorry, is kind of an abomination, but...
So you sound like every South Asian man in my DMs, okay. keeping great company.
Listen, I'm open-minded, but I would say, like, if you're really into that, like, you should patent that idea, because I feel like somebody, some, like, white kid is going to open up, like, a cafe in Greenpoint, you know, that serves, like, open-face rajma, with, like, turmeric sprinkles over it, so, hold on to that, I don't know.
It's like beans on toast, but rajma,
and
guys.
It costs, like, $20 for...
yeah. All right, we're gonna come back with Natasha after the break, and we're about to talk... sustainable, ethical fashion. Be right back. Hey guys, we're back. So I don't know if y'all have been noticing this as much as I have, but it feels like a lot of my Instagram feed has been shifting towards celebrating sustainable, ethical fashion consumption. Basically, moving towards like a more mindful consciousness when it comes to consumption. And I've been seeing all kinds of hashtags, like hashtag I made your clothes, hashtag handmade revolution, hashtag DIY. Like, it feels as if everyone wants a piece of this sustainability action. All these new brands are coming out talking about transparent production methods, talking about here are the people who made your clothes, really trying to tap into this ethics debate that we're having around how we buy things. And it's definitely been hitting fashion.
Yeah, it's been such an interesting shift to see. I think there's this backlash against fast fashion, particularly in the last few years. And it's weird because we're at this stage in our lives where, like, part of it for me, I'm sure, is also just that, like, we're getting older. And, you know, there's that joke about, like, no one over the age of 21 should be wearing, should be shopping at Forever 21. And I think that part of it is that when you're young or you're broke or you don't have a lot of, like, fast fashion for a lot of people is the only thing that they can afford.
And it's sort of like a way of accessing the life that you want in a lot of ways. Obviously, we're very sold to when it comes to good advertising, especially as like advertising has been moving towards being more like inclusive. Fast fashion has definitely been a part of that, but there's also this like major cost to fast fashion. Like, we know that most garment workers are, you know, working class, some of them live below the poverty line, a lot of them are women, they're from the global south, like they in a lot of ways like they look like us and they have a lot of the same issues that we have, but we kind of don't think about them when we're buying stuff from Forever 21 or H&M or Zara or whatever. Like, there is something really missing here in how we're purchasing these items, and it's just an awareness of what these people are going through on the other side.
I think sometimes that awareness really only comes, you know, to the public forefront when there's some massive horrific disaster. And the two that come to mind are the Rana Plaza disaster and the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory.
Right. Rana Plaza being the most recent, and then the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire being like a huge part of New York history.
Right. So Rana Plaza was this massive building collapse in Bangladesh in 2013. It is now, I think, technically the deadliest garment factory accident in history. Over 1,100 people were killed. Most of them were women.
Young women, especially like teenagers, women in their early 20s. Like, I think that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, I think the sort of really horrific thing about Rana Plaza is like people had been, cracks had been noticed in the building, had been seen in the building the day before, and the building had been evacuated, and the owner had essentially mandated that these young women workers return the next day and report to work. And
it's also really hard for these women to give up their work. Like, even if there are issues in their workplace conditions, it's not like you can give up a day's worth of wages or a week's worth of wages to take a stand. You know, it's a very difficult situation that they were in. And when the collapse happened, like, I feel everyone was shocked by it, but all of these brands were trying to get ahead of it, trying to be like, oh, even though, like, we were buying from this factory, like, we're going to make more attempts to fix workplace conditions.
And right. And these were brands like Zara, Walmart, Mango, Children's Place, all, you know, Bangladesh is an incredibly cheap place to produce garments and to have this kind of labor. And yeah, and there's this like sort of PR spin that comes out immediately, right? Where they're both condemning the conditions, which is bizarre because they were part using of these suppliers. Mm-hmm. And then making a lot of, like I think after Rana Plaza, there were sort of these temporary compliance agreements that were set up, which, you know, don't do all that much long term to protect workers and to improve workplace conditions.
Right. Well, it's also, I think, like a something missing in the culture. If you don't care about these people all the time, these brands aren't going to care about these people all the time. They're going to care about it for as long as it's part of the news cycle. And that's what happened. Like, I don't think we've seen anything in the last 6 years really about workplace conditions for garment workers or for other workers for the most part who are
not
living
at
in
that
the global
scale.
Definitely not. And that's definitely part, I think, of this whole movement of consciousness towards ethical fashion. It's, we want to make sure that every aspect of the supply chain is in keeping with our politics, which is like a hard thing to ask for because, you know, we industrialize really quickly in a lot of these countries, and now we're asking for everybody to like stop cutting corners and to start doing things by the book, and we're still writing the book. So like it's kind of an impossible thing, and yet as consumers, as individuals, we are trying to do our best to fix this, and we all know it's still really hard because sometimes something looks really cute in a window and you can't help it, you can't think about it in every second of the day. But so that's why I think talking to Natasha from Gundi is great for this episode, because we're really invested in trying to be better consumers, better fashion buyers. And I don't know if anyone knows more about this than Natasha.
Wow. Okay. I wouldn't call myself an expert because I'm just like a normal consumer who just like maybe have read more than others and have seen like what these factories look like, because I'm from India and like I go back and you can like see what it's probably done to like a town. Like a lot of times it helps, but you know, or like just seeing how it's changed the economy and like the fabric of a place. So I've just I just wanted to like make a brand that kind of addressed some of those things that I'd seen growing up. But yeah, I also just feel like there's so much you know, I just felt that there was like such an irony in I don't know, this like they see like empowering like all these like social movements that are happening in the West, and how all these minorities, as they're gaining visibility in media and stuff like that, are making, as one does because we live in a capitalist society, all of this branded stuff, right? Like every movement needs like a visual language, and that includes t-shirts and mugs and pins and all that stuff. And where are all these things produced? They're all produced for cheap, for $1 in China, $1 in like, you know, all of the countries that these people come from. And I'm just like, yeah, there's a lot of irony in that.
We'll be right back after a short break with our full interview with Natasha.
Hi, we're back with Natasha Sumanth of Gundu Studios. So you were mentioning a little bit earlier seeing people not really question like where a lot of their products and their marketing and their merchandise for their movements comes from. Was ethical, tell us like a little more about the brand. Like, was ethical fashion always the goal?
Yes and no. I mean, it, like, I just didn't think it would reach the stage that it's at right now. But, yeah, definitely, because, I felt like if I was creating something for South Asian women, like, I had to be, mindful of where the things came from, just because if I knew, then I just couldn't, like, not source things ethically, essentially. And I always felt like I wanted to be inclusive of class, and I've, you know, I moved from India to the States, so I've been, like, really conscious of, like, just the different levels of class and privilege, and I've been fairly privileged growing up in India, so I think I'm always conscious of how, like a thing moves through, you know, these different layers. So, yeah, that's basically why I wanted to keep it ethical. And as I did more research, I basically just, it's like a rabbit hole. Like, once you learn about like sustainable fabric, or once you learn about how you can improve every part of the product you're making, and you know, want to make a difference, you have to start making choices. And like, yeah, it's just, it's hard to, it's like always a decision-making process of like, okay, if I'm gonna have like ethical fabric, fabric that's organic, sustainable fabric, but then like this zipper is not it's not sustainable, but I really need this zipper in this outfit, so like, how can I make up for that? Can I make sure that the people that are making the outfit are paid well or have good working conditions? And it's always hard to define what ethical or sustainable means, and you always have to give yourself a definition. And so I would say everything that I'm doing now falls within that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, like, it's hard to define what ethical is, but, like, if you could sort of make a start at it for our listeners who may not know what ethical is, how would you define it?
I would say making sure that you are considerate of the human capital that goes into making these items, and making sure that those people are taken care of in the same way you would take care of, like, are they called blue-collar workers or white-collar workers? I never know the difference.
Blue-collar is working class.
Yeah, white-collar workers are. And oftentimes, I think in this, like, weird capitalist system, blue-collar workers are not taken care of in the same way. So I think that would be, like, my base level. So that could mean so many things. That could mean that people just get, like, a good salary. Oftentimes in supply chain, like, the people at the bottom are the ones who, like, suffer the most. So just making sure that, you know, everyone gets a fair wage, and they have good working conditions. Like, that's the most basic thing. And then maybe, like, if they need healthcare, that you provide them with that. You know, some places don't have this system of insurance if it's, like, a small workshop. But at least, like, if your employee's sick, make sure that they have access to a doctor, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you say that human capital is, like, the important factor here, because I feel as if a lot of fashion brands use ethical to mean, like, water conscious, no pesticides, grown in America, maybe. Like, it's very environmentally focused. And I wonder if that's because it's easier for us to feel compassion towards the environment right now, when climate change is, like, all of our minds, and it is to feel compassionate towards working class laborers.
Well, and I think it sounds like there, from what you're saying, there are no industry standards for what gets to be labeled ethical or sustainable or environmentally friendly.
I think that there are industry standards, but it's really hard to regulate that stuff. And a lot of people don't regulate that stuff.
Right.
That's the thing. And it's such a... the problem with fast fashion is that it's these diverse products being produced at such a fast rate, and so it's really hard to regulate, like, each piece. Do you know what I mean?
There's no, like, global fashion body who's like, you can't use ethical because, you know, you use that zipper that you were talking about that maybe wasn't produced in the most ethical condition. Like, there's anyone awarding this, is there?
There's definitely people awarding it, and there are definitely councils that are award, like, there's, like, I know, like, people, the Walmart Prize is, like, something that talks to ethical and sustainable fashion. But I think that we also have to talk about the difference between ethical and sustainable,
right?
Because I think what you're talking about is more sustainable, like, how does mm-hmm. it impact the environment, and I think ethical has to deal with, like, people more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so, like, the not using too much water, or, like, you know, we didn't use pesticides in this cotton that we grew, or whatever, is more talking about sustainability and how this garment will break down once in the earth, once it's, like, once it's thrown away. And a lot of the garments that we wear, especially, like, stuff with like spandex and basically all synthetic fibers have plastic in it. So
that's yeah, crazy to me.
So, like, probably everything that we're wearing right now has plastic in it, so it's going to take a long time to decompose.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm speaking a little bit from my, like, lesser known experience. I briefly worked at a knitwear company in London, and I remember listening to a meeting where they were talking about how, like, they wanted to use, like, our sheep are happy on their packaging, but there's like there's like no way of like ascertaining whether like their sheep are happy, but like they wanted to be
our
able to like
sheep are happy.
Well, it's like that Allbirds brand, right? Like they also do that too. It's like they try to like advertise based on like look at how happy our producers are.
I mean, this is like a really common marketing tactic, right? This is why there's like smiling cows on your carton of milk, you know, and
which we know is a lie. Like that is a lie from like Big Dairy.
So
for sure.
Absolutely. I guess the question for you, Natasha, is do you feel like big brands sometimes get a pass or sometimes, you know, get away with calling their garments ethical or sustainable when perhaps that's not actually the case?
Yeah, 100%, because like their price points, like consumers are still gonna buy it, sadly. And honestly, I think that brands can do like I think it's the job of a brand to like be as responsible as possible, but I think also like consumers hold all of the power. I mean, we live in a capitalist like world and consumers do hold the power. So I think shifting, like if brands don't have the numbers, then they'll change their ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
let's
talk
about like pricing for a little bit, because I think, do you think that there's a sort of, I guess it would be like a minimum floor, like a lower threshold for like, if a shirt or a pair of jeans costs you $10, do you feel like it's just fundamentally impossible for that
100%
to have been made ethically?
Yeah, 100%. Because like it takes a lot to make jeans, and if it's for $10, then the person that stitched it probably did it for like $1 or $2. Do you know what
I
mean?
Or like 30 cents.
Yeah, even because like you like a lot of times I think the margin is like 70% or something for most fashion labels, which is wild. First of all,
do you know how that compares to other industries? That's because I know like the restaurant industry, for example, operates on like
20%
razor thin.
Yeah,
margins.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite high I think other industries. I think that the average, like what you're 60% is supposed to be a good margin for you to have. But I think realistically, people have like 40 or 50, like not even, you know. But I'm not a business person. Although I have a brand, I am still learning my way through this and Googling my way through pricing, and it's hard.
Like, even if it's like $10 versus like a $500 pair of jeans, there really is like no way of fully knowing if like you're actually buying for good labor practices, like if you're paying for that. Like,
or if you're paying for the profit margin.
Or yeah, if you're just paying for like, you know.
You're actually 100% paying for the advertising.
Oh,
that's
true.
That's what you're paying
for.
Yeah. Yeah, because I work in advertising and the budgets for making like one, like we had to, I was going to make an ad and we were going to film it in a day, and the budget for the ad was like $150,000 for just that one day. So you can imagine, you know, and like on the other side of it, the ad that you're building, the product in the ad, the person who made the product in the ad got paid maybe a dollar or two.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you think we make ethical and sustainable fashion more accessible to people then? Like I mentioned earlier, like for me, for the longest time, you know, I was shopping at places like H&M and Forever 21 because that was what
I
could afford.
Sure, I did in college too, yeah.
And so how do we get people to, how do we, I guess, either make this a more, like, how do we make price points more accessible, or how do we convince people that these items are worth their money?
Totally. So this is what I think. I think fast fashion has like really messed up people's idea of what the value of clothing is. So like in the 2000s, that's kind of when fast fashion companies started, or fashion itself like started to become so mass market. I would say like late 90s, 2000s, where people were really trying to make businesses out of fashion. And I think before it was a little bit more intimate of an experience where it was about the design and the clothing, and it became this like money making industry. I think maybe it has to do with like the economy crashing, it being just cheaper to produce things in Asia, certain Asian countries opening up their markets to foreign investment and factories and stuff like that. India like I think opened up their market in like the early 90s, before you couldn't do that so much. So I think that's what has to do with it. And so consumers in the West and now globally think that that's what jeans should cost and a t-shirt should cost. But it, like, think about our grandparents. Like, they owned, like, what, like, 6, 7, like, 10 pieces of clothing. They maybe bought, like, 1 or 2 things a year. And that's because it took so much time and capital and money to make that one thing. And they got it tailored to whatever their size, but they also had that item of clothing for years. And it's just like bad business, you know, like that's like evil business that's made us think that a t-shirt should be cheap. Like, have you tried to, like, if anyone tried to sit down and sew something, they would know how hard it is, you know? So
where do you shop? Like, what do you recommend that people check out? What are the brands that, like, you
give me a shopping
have?
List. I mostly shop at, like, thrift stores. Beacon's Closet is great. Thrift stores around Brooklyn. Etsy is a good place because I think you get to know, like, the maker most of the time. And you can tell between, like, a maker and someone who's reselling fast fashion. So that's good. I think just empowering yourself with knowledge. And also, like, buying less clothes helps you craft a really good style. So I think just, like, it's, like, curate your mind, you'll curate your closet at the same time, I guess. Like, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good call. I personally have been, like, moving away from fast fashion. I haven't walked into, like, a high street store in a long time, it feels like, because also I hate dressing like everybody else. I don't like wearing the same clothes people have. Like, it's really embarrassing when you walk into an office and, like, the girl sitting next to you has, like, the same pair of jeans that you have. Which is, like, a really stupid thing to be embarrassed about, but still. So it's
absolutely.
Like,
well, now you have even more reasons to.
Yeah.
To
right.
Yeah. That doesn't happen to me anymore, but I do remember this one time in high school because I went, like, I lived in India, and, like, in my high school, there was only, like, 4 fast fashion brands that were open. Like, there was, like, Pramod and, like, Mango, and, like, for 2 occasions during prom, me and this girl had the same dress because we both fucking bought it at Mango. And now I'm like, that never happens.
Again.
Never happens.
Yeah, but, like, it's also interesting, I think, talking about what I mentioned before with the rise on Instagram of, like, just higher consciousness around sustainable, ethical consumption. There's also a lot of really cool little, like, marketplaces on Instagram that you can, like, you know, like Shop Market or Noisef Bazaar, where it's, like, people selling their really cool clothes, and it's, like, it's a lot easier. I feel like I'm shopping on Instagram the same way other people are, but it's, like, cooler and more fun, and it's, like, whoever gets there first gets it. Like a Baba sweater for, like, half price or whatever.
Yeah. I've definitely shopped on Instagram a couple times, but not too much. Yeah.
Right. We'll have to, you'll have to share your, like, favorite accounts in the show notes.
No, because I don't want to compete with anybody else over these things. They already have, like, thousands of followers. I'm not trying to do that. But anyway, thank you so much, Natasha. This was so much fun.
This was so fascinating.
We learned so much.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, check out Gundi Studios on Instagram. Buy their cool ass stuff. All hand embroidered Zuri work from, like, you know, craftsmen in India who know their shit.
Yeah.
Traditional practices passed down.
Yeah.
And from Natasha, who knows her shit.
Right. Or is learning her shit.
Learning my shit as I go along.
Perfect.
Yeah. As are we all.
As are we all. It's a process.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with No Nazar Zone. Stick around.
And we're back. Okay. So now it's time for our favorite segment, or my favorite segment, No Nazar Zone, where we are constructively petty and we talk about stupid shit that's happened or bad takes that people decided to, like, hit send on Twitter.
Of course.
And, you know, it's like No Nazar, but that was fucked up. And I think the winning topic for today should be the Oscars. Not that any of us watched it, but we all know what happened. But we all know what happened during the Oscars. We know that Green Book won Best Picture because white people love white people.
Wait,
The Favourite didn't win enough. Yeah, Green Book won.
Yeah, but that movie is about, like, a black pianist who goes to the South.
But Mahershala Ali, who is supposed to be the star, as you say, got Best Supporting Actor. He was Best Supporting Actor in a movie that's supposed to be about him. So it's not about him. It's about the white guy.
I think if you know that it's based on the true story and you see the marketing, well, maybe not the marketing, but at least the poster, you might assume that it's this, like, thoughtful film about race.
Reverse Driving Miss Daisy.
But, like, white people continue to be white people.
Wow. I don't even know how else to explain it. It's just so, like, head-ass. It's just, like, so, like, fucking stupid. I don't know. So, moving on from that, Bohemian Rhapsody also won for Best Editing, which was hilarious. And The Favorite.
Yo, I like that movie, though.
But was the editing good?
I would say so, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, there's also this... I just feel like the entire... like, every single aspect of this ceremony, from, like, the months of the Academy going back and forth on all their decisions.
Kevin
pretty
Hart.
Much, yeah, every single, like, major film, with the exception of The Favorite, God fucking bless, had some, like, deeply problematic shit going on. Like, Bohemian Rhapsody had Bryan Singer, a whole thing. I just think that we should next year do a show that is exclusively about The Favorite.
Right.
Like, none of us watch the Oscars because they are that irrelevant. You know,
yeah.
And I just, like, now I'm just going to go look at Olivia Colman's, like, speech on repeat, you know?
Yeah. No nozzer, but make the Oscars just about The Favorite.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, only lesbians all the time.
Justice
lesbians
for
in Bollywood, lesbians in Bollywood in space. These are the next iterations of the Oscars. Yeah,
yes.
And then maybe we'll watch.
Maybe.
But I feel like the Oscars are so irrelevant now.
Basically. Exactly, but if they had lesbians, wouldn't you be a little bit more interested?
Especially in space.
Right.
100%. Right.
Yeah. We're going to make it happen.
All right, guys. This has been so much fun. Natasha, where can people find your stuff?
You can follow us on Instagram, Gundy Studios, and go on our website, gundystudios.com, and, you know, learn more about ethical and sustainable fashion. We got some content up there. You know, you can read more about how the products are made, all of that good stuff.
Right. Full disclosure, I am also editing the pieces that are showing up on Gundy Studios, so you know they're good. And this has been a great moment in brand girl synergy, bringing together everyone in the family.
Quality content.
Right. This episode of the Cardamom Pod is presented by Kajal Magazine in partnership with Listening Party. Follow the crew on Instagram at Listening Party Presents and at Canal Street Market. And follow Kajal at Kajal Mag. I'm your host, Nadia, and my co-host is Anushka. Our producer is Aziz Adib. Music provided by Sareen Patel. We'll talk to y'all soon. Keep an eye out for the evil eyes.